listeners. I'm Joni B. Cole, host of Author Can I Ask You? For people like me who love books and the stories behind the books, this show gives me the chance to ask authors about what they write and why they write. Plus, I like to throw in a few odd questions just to get to know each author a little bit better as a person. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Today, I welcome my friend and fellow writer, Mike Marin. Mike's been a radio and TV personality for 53 years, with stops in Detroit, D.C., Boston, New Hampshire. He has a long-running humor column in the Nashua Telegraph, plus he's published pieces in the Boston Globe and Chicken Soup for the Soul. Mike's also the author of three books. His first, a career memoir, 50 Shades of Radio, True Stories of a Morning Radio Guy Being Wired, Tired, and Fired. That book was followed by Lunch with Tommy and Stacia, TV's golden age of candlepin bowling. And his latest book, If These Walls Could Talk, on the history of New Hampshire's legendary Red Arrow Diner. Mike, welcome to Author Can I Ask You?
And as I listened to you read the books that I've written, they couldn't get any more eclectic than that as a collection, could they?
No, we'll get to the weirdness of your books in a moment, Mike.
Okay.
These are actually fabulous books. I can't wait to talk about them. But first, I'm a little bit of a fan of you and your radio days. So you were quite the radio personality. So I have to start here because you're still quite the personality. But when you were on the air, I know you interviewed hundreds of well-known people, including authors, and your trademark, you always seem to manage to uncover some surprising or left field question that made for a great interview. So, Mike, to get our conversation going, I want to ask you as the expert, if you had been a guest on your own radio show, what's one of those left field questions or surprising questions you would have asked yourself?
Well, this isn't really an odd question, but it's a question that I think pretty much everybody lies about. And so I would ask myself the question, do you have any regrets from your life? Now, I'm an older gentleman, and so I can look back with a great amount of clarity and perspective and say that, yes, I do regret some things I've done. And you never, ever, people always say, if I had it to do over again, I would do it just the same way. I say that's bull bleep because I honestly don't believe people don't have some regrets. And a lot of mine are rather personal, and I'm going to share one with you because in your book, Party Like It's 2044, you shared a lot of stuff that I would love to ask people on the radio. So the one thing that I do regret is that I remained a virgin until I was 25. And I wish
we're going deep already, listeners.
Hey, we only have a half hour. We got to get to everything, Joni. So I do regret that that I didn't really get jiggy with it until I was 25. and this is probably the first time I've ever admitted that publicly. So as an interviewer, you're already pulling stuff out of me. And so if there is such a thing as reincarnation, when I come back, I'm gonna start messing around a little bit earlier. And speaking of reincarnation, as part of my radio career, I was once put into a reincarnation, trance, or it's kind of like hypnosis.
Oh, yeah, and like going back into your past lives.
Growing up Catholic, you are forbidden from, you know, putting any stock in reincarnation. But I said, I got to try this. And we recorded it and then played it back on the radio. And the things that I saw visually during that reincarnation session, I don't know if I believe in reincarnation, but I know I saw what I saw, and it was just amazing.
Oh God. Well, you know, I'm right there with you. I don't know whether I believe it or not, but a psychic once told me that I had been one of the first settlers to come over to America. And so I had on the big heavy robes and the heavy cloth that the women had to wear back then. And she said that when I was getting off this little ship, you know, that had come from England, I had fallen into the water and drowned. So I really never set foot in America. But It resonated because I'm a Pisces and I've never liked the water. I've always been afraid of the water. I've always been afraid of heavy clothing. So who knows?
I also would point out to you that my birthday is 3 days away from yours. So
I am
I am a fellow Piscean, if that's the proper way to say it.
Well, do you like the water? Are you a water sign for sure?
No, I do not. I have no interest in water. I hate the beach. When I retired, and that's why, you know, that's why I didn't get laid till I was 25, because every woman I ever met wants to go to the beach. No, I don't want to go to the beach. I'm pale and I'm afraid of drowning. So maybe got a connection there.
But maybe we were on that ship together. Who knows? You know, I don't want to move on to from the regrets topic yet, because that's such a meaningful topic. And I did want to ask, have you had any professional regrets, now that you've brought up the subject of regrets? Anything? I mean, you've done so many iterations of careers, but any professional regrets?
Yeah, sort of. In 1983, I was working for the nation's first all-comedy radio station, which was quite a big deal because it got me a lot of publicity and put me on the map. It was still only 10 years into my career at that point, or roughly that. And because of all that, I started getting these job offers from around the country, from Grand Rapids, from Richmond, Virginia, from New York City, from Washington, D.C. And I chose to go to New York City because that is the top market in the radio world. And that job, sadly, only lasted for 6 months because the people that hired us, my partner and I, thought we were the funniest thing they ever heard. And then when we got there, they wanted to completely change our act. And that turned out to be, I guess, a regret in retrospect. But I'm still glad I can say that I worked in New York City. I'd look out the window of we were in the Daily News building, of course, of the great, where like some of the Superman movies were filmed up on East 42nd. And I could look south at the World Trade Towers thinking, I am now at the pinnacle of my career, yet I'm only a dozen years into it. So I probably should have taken one of the other stations, but I don't spend too much time dwelling about it, but I will admit I have had regrets. What about you?
Yeah. Professional regrets. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, maybe the decision to be a writer. absolutely not. You know, it's funny because of course we have regrets, but it doesn't do much good to dwell on them. So I'm sure every single day, you know, I regret that I didn't sit down at my desk sooner. One thing I regret, but it's hard to address, is I regret that I lose confidence a lot. And I think a lot of writers will do that. And why? Why question myself? Why question my stories? And it just wastes time and emotional energy. So I regret that I spend so much time second guessing myself. When I get down to it, I'm having fun as a writer and writing. So I don't know if that's a regret or a bad habit or just I'm a head case, but I really want to, well, or all of the above maybe, but that's something I want to change. But I, for the most part, no professional regrets. It's hard to be a writer and make a living at it. And I found what I love to do, which is to teach writing, which really feeds the writing that I do. So in that sense, I'm actually really proud of the professional trajectory that I found myself in or carved out for myself.
I have seen the people and have met a few of the people that you have taught over the years. And I can see that you just love doing that. And they love being around you because they know that your intentions are genuine. And they know they can learn a lot from you. And before we get off the topic of regrets, my favorite TV commercial is the guy who's getting a tattoo. And he ends up regretting it because the tattoo artist spells regret, R-E-G-E-R-T, regret.
Oh, that's funny. Can you imagine, though? I would probably have a misspelling on mine, too. The irony, right? A writing teacher, and I would misspell my own tattoo. But I don't know. I want to move on to books.
Okay.
Let's talk about your books. The subjects of your second and third book. The first book was about your career. Really, really interesting and full of so many fun anecdotes and the reality of working in radio. The subjects of your second and third books, one was the golden age of candlepin bowling, huge in this region. And the more recent one, the Red Arrow Diner in New Hampshire that's been in business 100 years. So when you're searching around for a book idea, how do you know if it's the right project for you?
I get asked that a lot. That's a really good question. I'm not sure that I have a satisfying answer. I don't really search around. It kind of comes to me.
Nice.
As far as the Candlepin Bowling book, and yes, it is a niche version for those listening out of New England that is bowling. It's the rules are pretty much the same, but it's a thin, symmetrical, tapered pin and a small ball about the size of a softball, and scoring is way less. And because it is so difficult, it is a real challenge, and everybody thinks they can do it well, but they can't. But there's a handful of professional bowlers that became big local Boston area stars and celebrities because they were so good at it. The TV show every Saturday at noon racked up anywhere from 200,000 to 400,000 or 500,000 viewers, and
wow.
Often beat the Red Sox, the Bruins, the Celtics, the Patriots. And it was truly, truly amazing. So I had a chance for 10 years to, actually 9 years in full disclosure, 9 years to host a Candlepin Bowling show in Boston and in New Hampshire, and got to know a lot of these people and saw the fan adoration that they were receivers of. And it was really interesting to get their stories, and I got to know them well. And I looked around, and I said, why hasn't anybody written the story of these men and women who have this amazing skill and are just absolutely followed, very rabid fans? So I started to dig in. And of course, when you do a book, as you know, you do find out things that kind of surprise you. And that is one of the things I love most about writing this type of book, is that I find stuff that I know people are going to love because they haven't heard it before. It hasn't been told to anybody else, but maybe me and a handful of others. So the books come to me, as did the Red Arrow Diner book. I was doing a radio show, a food show, because I'm kind of a foodie. And the woman I was doing it with was the owner of the Red Arrow Diner, excuse me, which at the time was probably about 95 years old. And I said, you know, Carol, in about 5 years, you're going to wish that you had a 100th anniversary book to look back at all the things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she agreed. And so I just went to work and wrote it and had it ready pretty much for the 100th anniversary a year ago, October. And that book yielded even bigger surprises. You have this little teeny tiny diner in Manchester known primarily because of all the politicians that come during the primary. If you watch any, you know, CNN or MSNBC or Fox, you will see the Red Arrow Diner in a lot of live shots starting probably in the winter. When the actual primary begins. So
it begins again.
Yeah, here we go again. And, you know, being living in New Hampshire as I do, it is fascinating to watch all the crazy characters, the parade up and down Elm Street in downtown Manchester, where all the satellite trucks set up and all the interviews happen. And I've been able to be a part of that with my morning radio show by hosting it in the lobby of the main hotel, because I knew people. They put us in the best spot, which made me the victim of a lot of dagger stares. People that said, how did you get that great spot? Hey, you got to know people. But anyway, I don't want to get too far afield here, but it's things that interest me and that kind of come to me. Now that I'm past, you know, I finished that book over a year ago, I'm just kind of taking a breather and deciding what I want to write next. And nothing has come to me yet.
Well, like you said, your projects find you sometimes. So, yeah. Yeah, that Red Arrow Diner book, it's just fascinating. The stories, the people that have ordered those blue plate specials. And of course, as a foodie, you, not me, I'm definitely not. Well, I love food. I'm just not a cook like you are, a chef. But I did want to ask you, but we don't have to go into it now, about your pizza cupcakes. I heard that's one of your specialties. So, you know, that was a question I thought I might want to uncover, but I don't know. But I love the topic of your book ideas. And I do feel like that, like any good writing project, once you start writing, you should be more and more and more and more interested in it. The things you're uncovering, you know, the curves it takes, and you could just see the discoveries in both those books in terms of personalities, you know, and the backstories. So, yeah, they're wonderful subjects. So, Mike, as a radio personality, you're someone with a lot of experience on both sides of the query. And you know us authors, we're always hawking. We're always trying to get attention for our books. And for most of us, we have to drum up our own publicity. So as the guy that's been behind the mic, the guy who decides which authors to interview, I need some inside scoop here, Mike. How can I get more attention for my work?
I find that most authors don't work hard enough at it. And you have to get over being shy. I don't really direct that at you because you're not shy. But I think a lot of people, a lot of authors, they write the book and they think, well, here it is. Beat a path to my door and interview me. Doesn't work that way.
Are you sure it doesn't work that way?
No, see, that's your problem.
That's one of my problems.
You do need to take real ownership, be very proactive, reach out to local media. Of course, podcasts and social media now have really changed the ballgame and made it so much easier. Trouble is, you got a lot of competition out there. So what you really want to do is find a few things about your book and about you personally that make you stand out. Why should somebody interview you about the Civil War, if that's your topic, as opposed to 50,000 other people who've written the same thing? Find something that is really surprising. And as an author, as a researcher, you'll have those things and kind of use them as teasers in press releases, in emails, in queries to local media. Make it so that they have to talk to you because they're dying to know the answer. I was thinking about that, knowing that you might ask me that question. And for the Red Arrow book, let me see. So this is like the one sentence I would use about my Red Arrow book, because most people have never heard of it. It's a diner. So what? So the sentence I would use is, how did the Rockefellers, Paul Newman, and RuPaul connect with this tiny diner in New Hampshire?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
It's like there is no real commonality there, except it began at the very beginning. The Rockefellers became friends with the son of the owner, and he went on to this marvelous career as an attorney helping distribute some of the charitable works of the Rockefeller Foundation. And he got noticed by Eleanor Roosevelt, and he had an offer to play ball for the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, stories of the owner in this particular case, and RuPaul works into it, and so does Paul Newman. And those are the things I didn't see coming, and neither did anybody else. So find those interesting, quirky things about your book that you're pretty sure nobody else has really written about, and make that a part of your presentation.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah. And show that you have some personality, because if you're going to get interviewed, you have to have something to say. You have to really be confident and enjoy and love the book that you wrote.
You know, I can understand how the word publicity sometimes, if you're sort of a born and bred writer, can send shivers down your spine. But what helped me was when I started thinking about it, not so much as just pushing my books, which, you know, is the reality, but it's the way to connect with readers. And that actually is a payoff and really enjoyable. So that mental shift kind of helped me a lot. And when you have to find that log line or that elevator pitch, as you did, to quickly grab somebody's attention, I've found that that also serves the writing process to kind of know what is that nugget, that hub of your work that makes it instantly engaging for readers. So to even practice that art of finding that log line of pitching fairly, you know, early in the drafting process helps to shape the book itself and get you a little bit excited about it. Yeah, I like doing it. It's a very time consuming effort to get these connections, to get on different podcasts or shows. But I don't mind it, other than the time. You need to devote that time to it. And of course, that's time you're not writing or watching Netflix. So,
Exactly. Yeah.
So publicity, you know, maybe isn't the most fun thing about being an author, but I don't know, Mike, for you, what is the most fun or meaningful thing about being an author?
Well, I would say after having done radio for, as you pointed out, 53 years, radio is life in bite-sized pieces. You have to essentially get your message out. People's attention spans get shorter and shorter. So to have impact, you have to learn how to say things in a very economical, streamlined way. Now, I was lucky for much of my career. I did morning radio, and there's a lot more breathing space. You can actually tell a story or hear from people and take phone calls. But if you don't do morning radio, then you are speaking in very short sound bites that, quite honestly, not very satisfying. But what I love about writing and being an author is, okay, guess what? I'm the boss now. I get to decide everything. I don't have to talk in 15-second sound bites, and I can develop stories and give them life. Now, the perfect thing about having my background as a broadcaster is, hey, you know what? This ability to streamline and use impact with words and economy of scale is, it makes your writing better. And I never really thought about that until I realized that, you know, I can say something in fewer words. I give you an example. I just did a piece for a national magazine, bowling, of course. And so he said, well, I want you to do it in 700 words or less. So I got it to 700 words. And I said, I'm going to put it aside and I'm going to look at it again tomorrow and see if I can make it better by shortening it. So the next day I cut it by about 10%. You don't see that at the time you're writing. That's why you're always editing, and making it even better.
You know, every time I get burnout, like, oh, I can't do one more draft, because I'm a writer who really drafts and drafts and drafts and redrafts and, you know, scrutinizes every word. But when I get burned out, oh, I just can't do it. I envision that book on the shelf. And the first thing I know is going to happen when I open it up is I'm going to find the one sentence I wish I would have spent more time on. So that kind of keeps me honest in terms of writing and rewriting. But Mike, I want to switch topics now, because I'm curious about your long running humor column. You know, my own books are often put in the humor category. And that's kind of surprising to me sometimes, because they often deal with such difficult subjects. But I'm curious, how do you find the funny when you're writing?
You know what? You, when you're a column writer, and I think as you're a humor writer, so you're just doing it with a little less frequency. I do two a month. So, and I've done 700 over the last years, although you've probably written close to that as far as essays as well. You are a 24/7 observer of life. And in my case, self-deprecation. And after having read your book, Party Like It's 2044, you also are big into admitting your vulnerabilities, and people appreciate that. And when you can make it funny and just show how crazy, ridiculous, and ironic it is. I mean, there is nothing funnier than irony in my eyes. And to be able to look at something and instantly see the weirdness about it, the craziness, is a gift. It doesn't come all the time. So sometimes I'll just sit down and brainstorm. I would say 90% of the time when it's time for me to write my twice a month column, I know what I'm going to write about because something happened. I put a notes thing into my Apple phone and I open it up and say, oh yeah, that's what I wanted to write about. And then I just zip off 500 words and it's done. So it's life. Life is funny if you can let yourself look at it in any number of ways that are going to make people smile or laugh or think. And whenever you can make fun of yourself, because you're going to do it to other people, that's your license to, you know, open season on everybody if you have to.
I think humor is about observation and just really paying attention to, you know, those foibles, those things that happen that are either ironic or just, I think humor and humanity, that they share a root word and there's a good reason for it. So I think that observation and also paying attention to how your own mind works. I get a lot of comments with my books. I just can't believe the way you think. And again, it's surprising to me because it's just the way I think. So I don't think of it as unusual, but a lot of the humor, when I really look back at the book, given these responses, is about the internal monologue, my interiority, the way I look at the world. And so for anyone out there who wants to write humor, I think just be very observant. You know, humanity has a lot of inherent humor, and pay attention to the way your mind works. So, and of course, humor can be found in any situation, you know, and so because humanity is in any situation. So it's a fascinating topic. It's one that I'm really interested in delving more deeply in, because now that I'm in this category, I better know what I'm doing. Though I'm afraid if I look into it too much, then I'll mess up what I'm doing. So,
No. You definitely belong in that category.
So, Mike, I need to ask you a question that I like to ask at the end of Every episode of Author Can I Ask You? So are you ready?
Oh boy. Oh boy. I was 25. Okay, that's the answer.
No, we've already covered that crap.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
That's right. So, Mike, if you had to write a six-word memoir, what would it be?
Oh boy, six word memoir. This is like doing Wordle now.
Don't you hate when people post their Wordle scores on Facebook?
Yeah, I never do it unless I get it on the first try, which I have twice. In fact, I've been working a little during this interview, and I'm stuck on something. I'll have to ask you about later.
Haven't done it today, so.
Okay, so the six here is the six word memoir. Publisher paid 10 grand per word.
Publisher paid 10 grand per word.
It's a six word book. I got $60,000. Okay, let me try another one here.
Oh, that's funny.
Here we go. Let your passion be your guide.
Oh, I love that. What a gift that is for writers, too, that we can do that. We can choose our projects. We're not just handed our assignments. We get to choose them based on that passion, impulse. Yeah. Well, you certainly did that with your books, and I hope I continue to do that with my books. That's a beautiful six-word memoir. You got some options there. So, see, you wrote two books. You wrote two books at the close of this interview. So,
I know. I'm going to get on the phone to Houghton Mifflin this morning and see if I can get them published.
I think so. I think just a quick phone call with your pull could do so. Well, our time is up, Mike, but I cannot thank you enough for this fun interview. What a treat to get to visit with you and connect with you. So, I really appreciate you being here and lending your expertise and, of course, all your talents. So, thank you. And I'd love for you to email me your pizza cupcake recipe. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this conversation between me and my multi-talented friend, Mike Morin. To learn more about Mike's books, or if you're looking for a recommendation for the best blue plate specials at the Red Arrow Diner, make sure to visit Mike's website at mikemorinmedia.com. Plus, I'd love it if you check out my new book, Party Like It's 2044, available wherever books are sold.